You're listening to a Dwell Community Church production. If you'd like to check out more resources, visit dwellcc.org.
So, as we've said, Paul has been writing to this tiny church in Colossae, modern-day Turkey, and it's been infiltrated by this group of Jewish Gnostic teachers. It's like Judaism and Gnosticism came together and had a baby. 9 months later, these false teachers popped out, and they've infiltrated this little church. Paul is going to address the importance of having a solid Christian worldview here in chapter 2. We read in verse 1, "I want you to know how great a struggle, weak, agona, that is the word agony in modern English, how much I agonize. I've been losing sleep over this church. I want you to know how great an agony I have on your behalf and for those who are at Laodicea, that little church 10 miles away from Colossae, and for all those who have not personally seen my face." Why was Paul in agony for them? Well, in chapter 2, we see just repeatedly there are these false teachers that I mentioned. They're trying to delude you, verse 4. Take you captive, verse 8. They're trying to be your judge, verse 16. They're trying to defraud you and get you to worship angels. That was totally Gnosticism. The idea that there were these separate entities, aeons, angels, gods, spirit beings, between us and the true God, the Pleroma. They wanted them to get into angel worship, and they would have argued that Jesus was just one of these spirit beings, lowercase g, God. Finally, they're into self-made religion, self-abasement, and severe treatment of the body. Gnostics hated the physical world, so that led to either wild licentiousness, where it didn't matter what you did with your body. Like, brother, I saw you down there at the prostitution ring. What were you doing down there? Oh, dude, brother, that was just my body, not my soul. My soul is pure. I was just doing something with my body. It doesn't matter. Or the other option is that they would be severe toward their bodies. Whipping, lashing, self-flagellation. It got real, real weird, real fast. And Paul is in agony that they would fall into this. Verse 2. So he says, "My goal is that their hearts may be encouraged." Like the word here means like to put courage in. Courage in. "That they would be fortified." How? "Having been knit together in love and attaining to all the wealth that comes from the full assurance of understanding, resulting in a true knowledge of God's mystery, that is, Christ himself, in whom are hidden all the treasures of wisdom and of knowledge." Maybe you're wondering, why am I going through a season following Christ where I'm not encouraged? Here we see that this encouragement comes through what? Through what means? Well, he says, being knit together in love. This word here, knit together, comes from two words. Soon, like synergy, together, energy together, and bino, meaning to walk. This word knit together means to walk together. So, I'm sure you've had that example in your life, or that experience, rather, where you've been able to walk with other people that are walking in the same direction as you. Or maybe you've had the opposite experience where everyone seems to be moving in the other direction. And you're wondering, you know, am I crazy? Am I the crazy one here? And then you get other people that are walking with you. And I don't know what it is. It's just that moral support that you're walking with others. And man, that brings a huge encouragement into your life. That's for sure. What else brings an encouragement into your life? Like that encouragement of having other believers walking alongside you. You know that feeling with me? What else would give you that palpable feeling of encouragement in your life? Do you see it? Full assurance of understanding, true knowledge, wisdom, and knowledge. According to Paul, what is it that brings encouragement into the life of the follower of Jesus? Truth. That's what. Why am I lacking encouragement in my life? Because I'm not getting into truth and knowledge. When you study your convictions and why you believe what you believe, your courage surges. You realize this is real. It's not just a psychological state. It's not just my emotions at that given time. It's real. And Paul, especially for this church, is saying, man, you've got to get into truth. He says in verse 4, I say this so that no one will delude you with persuasive argument. Not that persuasion is wrong. This is persuasion in the sense of rhetoric. Plato used it as the art of persuasion. There's really nothing wrong with this, so to speak. You can use persuasion and rhetoric and stuff, but if there's all skin and no meat and bones to your argument, then this results in just, well, I don't want to labor this point. You've all watched reels on TikTok, right? It's really big on rhetoric and the art of being able to make another view look totally bizarre and strange, you know? But then you break down what you're actually listening to and you realize there's no substance to this at all. This is what Paul is referring to here. He's saying, don't let them delude you with these arguments that when you actually look at them, there's not any substance to them whatsoever. And if you're with us when we studied Gnosticism a few weeks ago, I mean, you're hearing about the Pleroma and the Sophia and the Aeons and the Demiurges and and all this stuff. You're just like, where did they come up with this? Paul must have just been like, I can't believe anyone would buy into that. So it's all you know, makeup and no good looks. Yeah. Verse 5. For even though I am absent in body, I am with you in spirit. I am rejoicing to see your good discipline and the stability of your faith in Christ. What is it that was bringing Paul rejoicing while he was in prison, thinking about this very tenuous, flimsy situation in this church? What made him filled with joy? That they were banding together. It's one thing if you got haters, false teachers, people from the outside coming in, attacking. It's another if you've got the people sitting right next to you splitting apart. Paul says, yeah, I'm rejoicing to see your good discipline, a military term to describe the formation of soldiers. So this brought him joy and the stability of your faith in Christ. They weren't giving into this. They weren't falling into this false teaching. And Paul says it's because of the truth and the stability that the truth brings. Think about truth. When you believe that something is true, when you know it's true, this faculty has the ability to reassure you during times of doubt, to motivate you during times of discouragement, and to stabilize you when you're going through times of being erratic. Truth can do this. Came across this clip from comedian Bill Burr, and he was sharing about when he was a nobody. He was performing as a stand-up comic, and nobody knew about him, and he wasn't doing that well. And one night, Dave Chappelle heard his set. This is what he has to say.
Dave gave me one of the greatest pep talks I ever got. I was doing some shit at the Cellar, you know, and I got off stage and he was sitting on the stairs. Fortunately, I didn't know he was there. I would have, at that point in my career, I would have been like intimidated, somebody that big watching me. And I remember him telling me, he's like, man, your point of view is so dope, man. And he goes, it's gonna take you a lot longer to get there, but when you do, you're gonna hit hard. And I held on to that for like 7 years on the road, going, Dave thinks I'm funny.
That's dope.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so what did he just say? Said I was at a low point. Dave Chappelle said something to me. What do you say? You're good. You're good at this. You got what it takes. What you have to say is valuable, but it's going to take a little while. And then you're going to hit and you're going to hit hard. And he said, I just held on to that for how long? 7 years on the road. Dave thinks I'm funny. He thinks I'm good. There's somebody out there that actually has a better view of us than Dave Chappelle, believe it or not. God looks at you. The infinite personal God. The only two eyes in the universe that matter look at you with forgiveness, love, acceptance, courage, excitement, view you as a masterpiece. And God looks at you and says, I view you as a child, as a friend. I mean, we could go on and on and on the way God views you. And yet I'm over here emotionally erratic, going, you know, depressed one day, excited the next. Why is that? Why is that the case? Must be because I'm not focusing on this truth. Are you that way? Are you emotionally erratic? Or are you the kind of person that's untrustworthy, undependable? Remember talking to one guy, he was like, so I'd like to be able to lead around here. I was like, I would like that too. He said, but I guess I can't because, you know, you don't want me to do that. I was like, no, no, you can't because we can't depend on you. We don't know if you're going to be here any given night. So we don't even know if you're going to show up. When we think about the truth and that ability to have longevity over history, over time, to be stable, to be somebody who can keep moving forward, that idea, God thinks I'm a masterpiece. God thinks I'm a masterpiece. God thinks I'm his child. God thinks I'm his child. Yeah, you could squeeze that dry and never get to the end of it. Stability. Yeah, if you want stability in your life, you got to get into truth. Then he says, therefore, as you have received Christ Jesus the Lord. See, his audience would have known what this meant. I'm well aware that there's people sitting here with us who don't know what this means. You've got this vague idea of what it means to come to God. Well, received Christ Jesus. This comes right out of John's gospel, this idea. John 1. So he opens up his biography of Jesus' life with these words. Verse 12. To all, to some people, to the select, to the righteous, no. To all who did receive Jesus, to those who believed in his name, to them he gave the right to become children of God. What do we need to do? Receive Christ. Did you know last year $3 billion in gift cards went defunct because they expired? Oh, if I could get my hands on those, you know. $3 billion. Somebody got somebody a gift, $50, $100 even, $200. And they just never used it. They never used it. To the order of $3 billion in gift cards. Oh, man, what a tragedy. What a waste of money. What a tragedy. You know what is an even worse tragedy? Jesus Christ died for every man, woman, boy, and girl. And there's some people that are not cashing in on that gift. You know, it's like when you go to a restaurant with a gift card, you go in there and you get the food and the drinks and everything and you have a good time. And then they bring the bill and you're like, ah, I got this. So you get the gift card out and you give them the gift card that somebody else paid for, right? I didn't pay for this gift card. I'm just cashing it in. That's all I'm doing. I've got it and I'm cashing it in. That's all I'm doing. And somebody paid for this meal. Jesus Christ paid for all of your moral violations at the cross. Those are all paid for. He did that. That's accomplished. It's done. Now, our role is to do what? What are the verbs? Receive and believe and become. If you receive Christ into your life and you trust that what he did for you is true, you become a child of God. Oh yeah, free of charge. Therefore, just as you have received Christ, so walk in him. So a lot of people, they come to Christ and then they're like, all right, that's through grace. That was a gift, like a gift card, you know, it's free. But now I really got to get to work. Paul's like, no. I know the false teachers are into works, not you. Just like, how did you receive Christ? Anyways, that was free. And you just cashed it in. Yeah, it was through faith. Yeah, no works. Yeah. What are we seeing here? Walking with him is not this laborious, painful experience where it's just basically you're on your own now. Figure it out. It's walking with him, receiving through faith, and God gives you everything that you need to work for him, to follow him, and to serve him and love others. Then he says, you are being firmly rooted. That'd be an agrarian metaphor. So if people were from the country, they'd be like, we get it. And if you're being built up in him and established in your faith, built up, people in the city would have heard that and gone, oh, yeah, we know what that means to be an engineer, a worker, tradesmith, whatever. And you're building something up. They would get it. So country, city, wouldn't matter. Established in your faith, just as you were instructed and overflowing with gratitude. So that would be a good test for any follower of Jesus. If you're getting this, this is not just a book club. It's not just that we're walking together, getting into knowledge merely. It's that we're getting into knowledge to the point where we're connecting with a person. And then when you connect with God in this way, here is where the gratitude just starts to burble over and you realize, I'm a child of God. I'm a child of God. I am deeply loved. He loves me. He hears me. He answers my prayers. Me, of all people, me. He listens to me. And I've got access to him. And in a little while, like in a really little while, I'm going to be with him in eternity forever. And oh man, you start your day that way. You start to overflow with gratitude. But, he says in verse 8, see to it, beware, that no one takes you captive through philosophy and empty deception. Paul, anti-philosophy? Yes, anti-this philosophy. Now, obviously not anti-philosophy in the sense of the love of wisdom. You need philosophy to do theology. You know, the law of non-contradiction. You wouldn't be able to make a sentence without philosophy. Paul even said, in Christ is hidden all the wisdom, Sophia, philosophia, the love of wisdom. Here he's saying, he's using the article in Greek, the philosophy. It's this philosophy. Like if I said, don't drink the milk in the fridge. So you're like anti-lactose? Is that what it is? No, I'm against the spoiled milk. Same thing here. Gnosticism, bad. Don't let anyone take you captive. What does that mean? It was a word used in warfare, a graphic term that refers to being taken away as a slave or as treasure in warfare. And Paul says, don't let these teachers take you away in that sense. They want to enslave you. They want to ruin your life. What does this mean? I can think of at least two implications. First, this statement presupposes that not all worldviews are true, right? Take you captive to ruin your life. That must not be true. And second, this presupposes that not all worldviews are good. There are worldviews, ways of viewing our world, philosophies, religions, so on and so forth, that are not only false, but they're bad. Indeed, if something is false, it's going to be bad for your life. You could have things that are false that lift up your life temporarily, but if you're not living in accord with reality, you're going to have a bad life. Yeah. Like the Church of Scientology. I studied this. I got into world religions about a decade ago. I didn't read as much as I could have, but I read a couple books on it, one of which is written by Hugh Urban. He teaches over here at OSU. Pretty cool. And an investigative journalist. Then I read the actual primary source from L. Ron Hubbard, the founder of Scientology. Read that book, The History of Man. I didn't read Dianetics. I got to a certain point where I was just too grossed out by this whole thing. I was just like, I'm done. And I just let it lay dormant for about a decade. And then I was on Netflix one night, and this documentary, Going Clear, popped up. And I'm like, ugh. It's like when you have that, you know, sore in your mouth and it hurts, but like you can't help putting your tongue on it. You're like, oh, it hurts, but I can't help it. You know what I mean? I was like looking at this documentary and I'm like, it's past midnight. I got to watch this. So I put it on and pretty close to what I read. You know what else was close? The South Park episode. Pretty good. It's pretty good from all the reading I did. It was actually pretty accurate. Anyways, I brought a little clip from that documentary. This is from the leader of modern-day Scientology.
Well, thank you very much, and welcome to our whole new world. It's a world where the operative phrase reads, exceeding all expectations, transcending all parameters, extending the boundaries beyond any boundary, not to mention Godspeed, lightning speed, and a quantum leap in sheer rapidity of progress up the bridge. We're out to make every life extraordinary. And if by chance it ever seems laborious or a sacrifice, then you are looking at the off-ramps instead of the highway. You are missing the signpost up ahead, the one that reads, next stop, infinity.
All right. Dweller H.
LRH, Tom Cruise, brought in at the end, salutes the painting of L. Ron Hubbard. Watch that documentary. Pretty good. Of course, their view is that all religion is false, so you got to deal with that. But they do a really good expose. Anyways, why am I going into this? Okay. Just to show, I don't think there's a person in this room that would say, I think that that worldview, Scientology, is both true and good. It's false. It's not true. It was created by a science fiction author. He tried to make it a science, and then there were no double-blind studies that could show it, so he pivoted and made it a religion. And it ruins people's lives, steals their money. It's awful. So I guess my point is, if you agree with me that there's some worldviews that are obviously wrong, that cannot be true, then we're already into the realm of which worldview is true. With me? Some people say, well, all religions are basically equal. Hold on, not that one. And really, when you compare worldviews, you see very quickly that they can't all be true. There's similarities between different worldviews, religions, philosophies. There's similarities, but there's core differences. Like, I'm thinking of a man born in 1961, 6 foot tall, famous, and salt and pepper hair. Who am I thinking of? George Clooney? Wrong. Barack Obama. They have similarities, don't they? Same age, good looking, famous, but they're not the same person. And just to whitewash all religions and say, well, yeah, they're basically all the same because they have these superficial similarities is a huge error. I hope you can see that. In fact, let's look at some of the main world religions here. Theism, one God. Polytheism, many gods. Pantheism, God is pan, everything. Pangea, one continent, is everything. And then atheism, atheism, no God. Those would be like the basic worldviews, right? Let's start with polytheism. Polus means many, theos means God, many gods. Not too many people are into this today. Why? Because it's bogus. It's not true. Think about the Greek gods. They themselves were flawed. Like Zeus committed adultery with mortal women. He did this like a lot. He slept with a lot of mortal women. And then his wife, Hera, she didn't take it out on Zeus. She took it out on the women, children, and Hercules. Like, wouldn't you think she'd go back to Zeus? Didn't do that. She went and tried to kill Hercules in the crib. I would submit to you that is a bad worldview. Polytheism right there. What about pantheism? This would not be personal. See, it's infinite. God is in everything. It's infinite, infinite. But pantheism is impersonal. So while polytheism is personal and finite, pantheism is the opposite, infinite and impersonal. Under this worldview, all of reality is one substance, spirit. If God is everything in the world and in the universe, then he's just as much in you as he is in you, as he is in this water cup, this lectern, this stool, the dirt on the bottom of my shoes. There's no distinction because God is the one substance that constitutes everything. What this means is that I am you and you are me and we are all together, in the words of the Beatles. There's no distinction. This whole idea that we're separate from each other, that's all illusory. It's in the Eastern traditions, Maya. It's an illusion. Because if there is only one substance, then the idea that you're having a first-person perspective of the world, that's just an illusion. You're only kind of burbling up out of the all to have a first-person perspective, but really you should realize that's an illusion. Life under this worldview ends in annihilation. You go through samsara, reincarnation, over and over and over and over until you reach moksha. And you say, wow, that sounds cool. So it's like heaven. It's nothing like heaven, nothing like the biblical heaven. This, according to the primary sources, is like dropping a pinch of salt into a glass of water. You go back into the all. You lose personhood, dignity, identity, and you are extinguished. You're gone. History, not only for the individual, is cyclical, like reincarnation, but so too for the universe. Just keeps repeating over and over and over into eternity. It's been going on for eternity, and it will be going on for eternity into the future. What this means is evil will go on forever. Pantheism. I don't think this is a good worldview. Under this worldview, when people get recycled in reincarnation and they're brought in to be, you know, deformed, disfigured, you know, handicapped in any way. Why are they that way? Because they deserve it. That's why. They've been recycled through reincarnation to be that way. And the whole goal of this worldview is just annihilation, to be gone. And that happens for eternity. So far, I hope you can see these are not all alike. And they're not all good either. Atheism is the belief that there's no God. So it's impersonal and finite. Under atheism, there's no basis for consciousness, free will, and objective morality. Think about it. If you're a naturalist, that is, you believe everything is only one substance, not spirit, like the pantheist would say. They believe in one substance, spirit. Atheists are the strange bedfellow of the pantheist. They believe there's one substance, which is nature, matter, energy. That's it. If you believe that everything in the universe is natural, that means your thoughts, your moral feelings, and your sense of free will is also under the immutable, unchanging laws of nature. In other words, if everything in the universe is according to cause and effect, that means your thoughts are the result of cause and effect. If everything in the universe is just there because of indeterminacy, that means that your free will is just indeterminacy. So, consciousness, free will, objective morality, out the window. Now, if you're an atheist here tonight, I know that you probably affirm consciousness. How could you not? How could you have a thought about not thinking? I know that you probably affirm free will and you affirm morality. I get it. I'm choosing my words carefully. You don't have a basis to do so. There is no foundation philosophically for doing so. And under atheism, life has no ultimate significance. Do you know that the oldest woman in the world right now was born August 21st, 1909? 115 years old. A year from now, she'll probably be dead. Hate to break it to you. Then the next lowest birth date will be 1910. And then in a year, it'll be 1911. 1912, 1915, 1920, 1930, 1940. When were you born? You see where I'm going with this? Eventually, everyone that you've ever been born with, or everyone in this room, everyone that you know, is going to be swept up by the reality of death. And under atheism, this isn't probably going to happen. This is certainly going to happen. This means that the end of the story ends the same way, no matter what. No matter what, whether you are a Pol Pot or a Mother Teresa, in the end of the story ends in death. Here's Alex Rosenberg. This is from his book, The Atheist Guide to Reality. Now, I'm not giving you internet bloggers or something. This guy is a professor at Duke University. He says, what is the purpose of the universe? There is none. What is the meaning of life? Ditto. Why am I here? Just dumb luck. Is there free will? Not a chance. What is the difference between right and wrong, good and bad? There is no moral difference between them. Does history have any meaning or purpose? In the words of Macbeth, it's full of sound and fury, signifying nothing. John Gray, atheistic philosopher, says, quote, human life has no more meaning than the life of a slime mold. To say that humans, this one breed of mammals on the skin of planet Earth, third rock from the sun in the Milky Way galaxy, to say this one species out of hundreds of millions of others has value, but all the other species do not, what is that? Well, we just arbitrarily say humans have value? No, we have no more meaning than the fungus on your feet. Peter Singer, this guy's out of Princeton University. Human babies, he writes, are not born self-aware or capable of grasping that they exist over time. The life of a newborn is of less value than the life of a pig, a dog, or a chimpanzee. Where did we get this from? His book, Practical Ethics, first edition. He has never rescinded this claim. So, under atheism, life has no ultimate significance. There is no basis for consciousness and free will and objective morality. But theism, both infinite and personal. When you look at the evidence for belief in one God, it is astounding. In the last 100 years, the evidence for God has been pouring in more and more than ever before. For example, what is the best explanation for the origin of the universe? Cosmological theories right now all agree that the universe had a beginning. The universe had a space-time, matter, and energy beginning. That means it came from nothing. So how do you get something from nothing? Worse than that, how do you get everything from nothing? What's the best explanation for that? What about the fine-tuning of the universe? Did you know that the laws and constants and initial conditions in the universe are finely tuned so that if they were off by just a slight amount, just a little bit, any one of these laws, the universe as a whole would not permit life? You're like what? Here's one. Roger Penrose, the eminent physicist, says that the low entropy of the universe, that energy's utility, the usability of energy, is so low, it doesn't use up energy real quickly. The low entropy of the universe is finely tuned to 1 part in 10, raised to the 10, raised to the 123rd power. When he lectures on this, Penrose says, you can't write that number. To write that number, you would need to write a zero on every subatomic particle in the universe, and you would need 10 to the 43 universes to have enough particles to write it, just to get the number of zeros. He says, I can cheat by writing it with 2 exponents. How did that come into being? I think fine-tuning would require a fine tuner. I think a big bang would require a big banger. See how I did that? All right. Objective morality. What's the best explanation for that? Molecules in motion somehow created morality? Free will and consciousness. Minds came from mindless matter. Rocks and molecules and all of this one day came together in a certain organization to say, I think, therefore I am. No, you can't have a qualitative substance or quality like consciousness, thought, thinking, coming from something that cannot think. I think the case for theism is rock solid, rock solid. Well, as we wrap up, which of these 4 major worldviews do you believe? These are the major categories, the structure, the lattice work, so to speak. Which one of these do you believe? And more importantly, why do you believe it? Why do you believe it? Because your friends believe it? It's so weird when you talk to a grad student trying to get, professorship or tenure, you look at who he or she is in with in the university, if they're into deconstructivists or relativists or postmodernists, you look around at their colleagues and they're all deconstructionists and relativists and postmodernists. So what, we just believe what we believe because our friends believe it? Peer pressure? Do we believe our worldview because our parents believe it? Like, let's do a real quick vote. How many people here, raise your hand, love your mom? How many people here love their mom? All right. Now, how many people here agree with everything your mom believes? So, it's possible to love somebody but not agree with everything they believe. So too, when I've just been raised a certain way, that's your basis for saying, I'm going to hold my worldview because mom says so? What about this? Because you already made up your mind. I already made up my mind. I'm a pantheist. I'm an atheist. I'm a theist. I've already made that up. Came across this study. Look at this. 47% of people that rejected God did so before they graduated high school. 50%. Then 11% can't remember when they rejected God. I think that's probably a good case that it was sometime in high school. It's not like you did that last week and you're like, I can't remember when I did that. Okay, so it's probably somewhere along the lines of 6 out of 10 people rejected God before they got out of high school. Do you want a high school version of yourself to determine your entire life's journey and what you believe about the most important questions of life? Isn't this worth reflecting on, thinking about, rather than just saying, well, I figured that out when I was 13, or actually digging deeper into the answers here? Finally, however you answer your worldview question, are you willing to bet your life on it? As you view the world, so you will live in the world. Like, if you don't believe that there's morality, if you don't believe that there's free will, if you don't believe that your life has any purpose, then that's going to necessarily affect your life. That's going to bring dread and despair and dysfunction and relationships getting ripped apart in your life. I would argue that could ruin your life if you have a worldview that doesn't line up with reality. But even more important than whether or not you're willing to bet your life on this, are you willing to bet your afterlife on this? See, according to the Bible, we are going to live forever. And when you decide where you stand on belief in Jesus, you're making a statement of trust, believing in him for eternity. All I would say is, choose wisely. Please don't flippantly just say, oh, whatever, I guess I'll just believe whatever. We are talking about matters of life and death. And the way you choose on this is the way you'll choose on everything.